Today is Thursday, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Welcome, everyone, to House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is Thursday, May 4th, 2017. We'll start with the public hearing, and we're going to open public hearing on Senate Bill 1027. Representative Hayden, former member of this esteemed committee. Cassie, could you read the summary of that bill?
Senate Bill 1027A permits the transfer of ABLE account funds to the estate of a deceased designated beneficiary or to another eligible individual's ABLE account. The bill prohibits Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority from seeking payment from the ABLE account except as provided by federal law. The bill also restricts Oregon 529 Savings Network, 529 Savings Board, board members, and the state of Oregon from guaranteeing rate of return on ABLE accounts and limits liability for losses. The bill permits the 529 board to enter agreements regarding other states' ABLE programs and specifies that the designated beneficiary of qualified higher education account may direct investments by selecting offered investment options. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Sanchez. My name is Cedric Hayden, State Representative for House District 7. The ABLE account was something that started at a kitchen table many years ago on the federal level, discussing what can we do for people with disabilities that are not allowed to save over $2,000 personally without losing benefits. And so that took years to get through Congress. It finally did get through Congress, and the rules were written in Congress to where individual states could create their own plans. And once we had that approval, Sarah Gelser and I co-sponsored the ABLE account to become effective for Oregon. That has become effective, and we have a considerable amount of individuals that are contributing to that account. It's been a while since I looked at the numbers, but there was a significant amount of participation in the current account. One of the things that we have been concerned with is mostly a technical fix in this bill. If you look at 529 plans that we're more familiar with, those plans are for individuals to save for their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors' kids, whoever you want to help save for college. Those funds, when there's a beneficiary there that no longer needs those funds, they can, you know, give it to their children or their grandchildren or somebody else. And so we want to have the flexibility with this in the case of a disabled person either no longer needing the funds for various different reasons, that those funds could be transferred. The other thing that we want to make sure, in certain cases, the states have discretion to go recoup. Technically, they have the discretion to go recoup some funds from ABLE accounts to repay Medicaid costs. And we want to make sure that that isn't done unless it's a federal requirement that they have to do that, not just a state discretion to go out and put these families that really start at a disadvantage, at another disadvantage, if they have another sibling that could use these funds. We want to make sure that they can transfer it to them. They're not subject to additional funds being taken away from them. And so I do view this as a technical fix. It would allow more flexibility for the families with disabled children as they grow up so that they could have a better life experience. And that's what ABLE Account's all about. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I'm curious if you've looked at what other states have done. Are other states doing the same kind of?
I have. I don't. Yes, thank you for the question, Kenny Geyer, Chair Kenny Geyer. I have looked at quite a few other states and their formulas and how they do that. I think there was around 20 states that had legislation working through in 2015. Oregon was one of the first states to actually get it available. Mm-hmm. And so we may have been actually the first one to get it available. So some of those states haven't completed their rulemaking, but it looks like about half of our states, probably by the end of this legislative cycle, will have those available. And it varies a lot from states. States have the flexibility to decide how much money can be put into one of these counts. The state of Oregon, unless they've reviewed it since the last time, changed it since the last time I read it, would allow up to $300,000 to be invested into these counts. To grow for these individuals. And this, keep in mind, it seems like a lot of money, but this isn't just for college. This is funds to take care of that person for the rest of their life. Parents with disabled children, the thing that they worried about most is what happens when I die. And so this gives them some financial stability to where they can be assured that there's a reasonable amount of funds available to take care of their children after that takes place.
Any other questions? Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Do we have someone from DHS? Oh, we have actually Michael Parker from State Treasury.
Morning. For the record, Michael Parker, Executive Director of the 529 Savings Network. I'll be brief. We, again, always thank the representative for his sponsorship of ABLE, and it's a great plan. We did open the ABLE plan back in December of 2016. I'll just give you a couple of numbers. We have about 560 accounts in ABLE in Oregon now. That represents about $1.5 million. So we are making some significant progress. The reason this technical fix has come up is because we've heard a number of people asking us, well, if I have family members contributing to ABLE, my ABLE account, so it's coming in from parents, grandparents, other folks, we don't want that basically gifting to be subject to Medicaid recapture. And we're seeing a number of states, I can tell you at least 17 states nationally are looking to fix this problem now. Also, the National Down Syndrome Society nationally is looking to fix this problem federally. We think we can make the fix at the state level as well to kind of head off some of that issue. So the other thing what we're looking at is we don't want any barriers to having folks save. Certainly, people with disabilities have had disadvantages their entire lives with saving. This is just one extra barrier that we don't want to put in. So we think it's an important fix so that when we tell folks, invest in the ABLE plan, put your money in, we can say it's really not subject to Medicaid recapture, which is we're getting that question quite a bit. We're talking to other states that have ABLE, and they're also getting that question as well, how does Medicaid work with these plans? So we think it's an important fix just for us to be able to say not subject to Medicaid recapture. So with that, happy to answer any other questions that you might have.
Okay, I have one more question just about the how you can use the funds.
Mm-hmm, sure. Sure.
And the intersection with 529.
Sure. Chair Kenny Geyer, you can use these funds essentially for any issue that benefits your life as a disabled person. In the federal statutes, it does call out a number of things: housing, transportation, education, legal fees, those kinds of things. And at the bottom of that list, it says other. And so while we don't interpret what other might mean, we have talked to many folks, and essentially it's anything that's going to make your life better as a disabled person. We don't check on the distribution, and we don't qualify it or disqualify it. That really is up to the person taking the distribution. But we think it's much more broad than certainly 529 college savings plans. Currently, the intersection between the two is blocked right now by federal law. You can't transfer money from a 529 college savings plan to an ABLE plan. We think that's a flaw in the system because you may not know, unfortunately, that your child may be autistic at birth, but certainly it might show up 2 or 3 years later, and you could have a substantial savings in a 529 plan for college for that kid at 3 or 4 and then want to transfer it over. We are working with our congressional delegation to get that change to allow for a transfer from 529 over to an ABLE account in the case of a disability when the child is older.
And would there be any advantage to moving any of the money from the ABLE account over to 529 for college?
Representative Kenny Geyer, no, because ABLE allows for college expenses.
And
yes.
It's invested at the same rate.
Correct.
And all of that.
And you get the same tax benefits and the same federal tax benefits as well. So there really isn't any issue there. It's going the other way that we think is important.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? anyone else to testify on this?
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1027 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 948. Cassie, please read us the summary.
Senate Bill 948 prohibits residential facilities receiving public funds from hiring an individual found to have committed abuse. This bill requires DHS to adopt rules to specify the types of abuse that disqualify an individual from working at a residential facility and prohibits the individual found to have committed the abuse specified by DHS from a fitness determination.
Okay.
We don't have anyone signed up to testify.
All right. This one passed unanimously with one excused. So please look into this. Sorry that you're not getting more of a public hearing on it, but it'll come up for a work session, so look into that. All right. Then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 948. And got a number of bills to work that we heard last week. We're going to start with a work session on Senate Bill 104. Cassie, please remind us about this bill.
Senate Bill 104 clarifies provisions for Department of Human Services criminal background check registry for persons who work or seek to work in providing care to children, elderly, or persons with disabilities. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal is savings of $49,846 to DHS and savings of $8,864 to OHA. The revenue has no impact, and the Senate vote was 30-0.
All right. Let's see. Vice Chair Sanchez.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this bill? All right. Seeing none, any objection? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative
Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Nobel? Aye. Representative Pelosa? Aye. Representative Stark? Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. Motion passes. Who would like to carry this on the floor? Involves adding people to the registry for home care, facilities, long-term care.
I'd like to do that?
Sure. Thank you. Representative Gorsuch will carry this. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 104 and open a work session on Senate Bill 245. Cassie, please remind us of this bill.
Senate Bill 245 clarifies the definition of child for the purposes of statutes governing child caring agencies. The bill modifies the definition of child caring agency to exclude facilities only serving persons over age 18 and facilities that require children to be accompanied by a guardian. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal and revenue both have no impact, and the Senate vote was 29-0 with one excused.
All right. Motion, please.
Okay. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 245 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 245 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Did we skip 244?
Any objection? 245, you said, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Meek? Aye. Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative
Pelosi? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. Senate Bill 245 passes to the floor. How about a carrier? This is around child caring agencies.
I can do it.
All right. Vice Chair Sanchez will carry that bill, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 245. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 760. My apologies to those of you in the room who came to see an example of a Human Services and Housing Committee in session, because these are bills that we've heard a lot about and are just in the position of passing on.
Senate Bill 760 requires public or private officials to report suspected abuse of long-term care facilities, residents, or certain adults with developmental disability or mental illness after any contact with a suspected abused person or abuser. The fiscal is minimal. There is no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 30-0.
All right.
There you go. Yep. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on this bill? Any objection? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Forsyth?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nunez?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kennedy? Aye. Senate Bill 760 passes. Vice Chair Olson, would you like to carry this?
I'll take it.
Certain abuse reporting responsibilities? Okay, great. So we're going to close. So Senate Bill 760 passes to the floor. Vice Chair Olson is the carrier, and we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 760. Open a work session on Senate Bill 830. Cassie, please remind us this one.
Senate Bill 830 modifies the definition of current caretaker to mean a foster parent who is currently caring for a foster child or foster child siblings with a permanency plan for at least 12 cumulative months. The fiscal is minimal. There is no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 27-0 with three excused.
All right.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 830 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 830 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any comments? Any objection? All right. Cashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Nierman? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kennedy?
Aye. Senate Bill 830 passes to the floor. Representative Stark, would you want to be a co-carrier on that? Okay. Okay, Representative Stark will be the carrier. Close the work session on Senate Bill 830. And open a work session on Senate Bill 17.
Okay. Senate Bill 17 removes the requirement that the superintendents of the Oregon State Hospital and Department of Corrections designate a chief medical officer for their institutions. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. There is no fiscal and no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 29-0 with one excused.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 17 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill
17.
Behind my paperwork. To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objection? Ashley, please call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kniger? Aye. Senate Bill 17 passes, goes to the floor. Representative Peluso, would you like to carry this bill?
I do.
All right. Thank you. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 17, open a work session on Senate Bill 821. Cassie, please read the summary.
Senate Bill 821 directs Oregon Housing Stability Council to consult Community Action Partnership of Oregon in developing policy for awarding grants to organizations from the Emergency Housing Account, including aligning with federal homelessness prevention strategies. There is no fiscal and no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 30-0.
All right.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 821 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 821 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Peek?
Aye.
Representative
Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kniger? Aye. Senate Bill 821 passes to the floor. Representative Meek, would you like to carry this
yes,
one?
Yes, thank you, Madam
Chair. All right,
Chair.
Great. Close the work session on Senate Bill 821 and open a work session on Senate Bill 834.
Senate Bill 834 requires Department of Human Services to develop a proposal for establishing an independent human rights commission to safeguard dignity and human rights for individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities. The bill requires DHS to report findings and the proposal to the Legislative Assembly by December 1, 2017, and repeals the proposal development on December 31st, 2017. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal is minimal. There is no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 1911.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 834A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 834A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Thanks, Chair Kenny Geyer. So I have a couple of problems with this bill. So first of all, we did the Sibling Bill of Rights earlier this session, and I was pleased with that. And that seemed to regarding foster kids as needing to contact with their siblings to enhance their life and everything. So it seemed like a good bill. This one's a little bit different here. This one, I've just had a problem with this ever since we first heard it, but it kind of regards intellectually and developmentally disabled people as people who, have visitors and entertain themselves and engage in personal hygiene and have intimate partners and eat whatever they eat, and it doesn't seem to me to be getting at what it really means to be human. You know, things like finding their full potential through their employment or their productivity, those kinds of things. So I just have a problem with how this views just even the idea of rights. I think the founding fathers wouldn't have done this, said that rights are about satisfaction of appetites. They would have said rights are about doing what you need to do to fulfill yourself as a person. Things like being able to worship as you please, or being able to have free speech and free press so that you can create a good government kind of thing, which aren't really appropriate to this, but it's just kind of a different thinking about rights. My other problem with this is that it's one thing to say let's set up a commission or a study group or a task force or something to achieve a task and to give it some basic guidelines or principles. We want you to identify some policies regarding these things or whatever, these general things. This one seems like it's already got the cake baked. It says safeguard the dignity and basic human rights of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, including but not limited to the right of individuals to, and then it talks about specifically what those rights are. So it's almost like the work has already been done on this. There's no thinking to be done or anything. So I'm not happy with this at all, so I'll be a no on this.
Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I am going to vote yes on this. However, when it comes around to the commission point after the recommendation, I don't know what I'll be at that time. And my hesitation on this is that this seems like what the department should be doing. It seems like we shouldn't need a bill to ask the director of this department to put together a proposal with this information. This just seems like it's common sense. If you are overseeing, this portion of the agency and all the things that they're doing, that this goes in line with normal planning about what you're supposed to be doing. That being said, I'm interested to see what comes out of it when it comes around to a commission to then defend for those things when I think the agency actually should be doing it, regardless of a commission. We'll discuss that next session, but I just don't understand why they're not already doing this.
So Vice Chair Sanchez, and then I see you down there, Rep. Noble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe the frustration with that, but one with the pieces around, why spell these all out and why a commission sort of, it seems somewhat after the fact. And then I think about, I ran those things through my head as well, but I think about the fact that in this country we've always sort of looked at things, you know, the way we see them first shot, and we don't pay attention maybe to the detail or the minutia or anything, or really how anybody might feel or think or wonder or what their advancement might be in the world. And we do that really, and I'll just say it straight out, in a really oppressive way with people who have intellectual or developmental disabilities. And we do that with a lot of people, any disability. We look at it as, you know, well, I got to take care of that situation, which is part of the reason I asked the question about whether or not this commission could be swayed by parents. Because as parents, we're often the ones who say, oh, don't do that, you're going to get hurt. We're constantly looking to try to take care and make sure everything, and especially when we have a child with developmental disabilities, we're so overly protective, or any kind of disability, any kind of struggle. We're overprotective, and we want to take care and make sure that everything's okay, and we limit their capacity. Mm-hmm. And we just do it. It's just, you know, it's a sad reality. But what I want us to think past is the ability, past and move forward to, is the ability of this commission to say that there is more to it than that. There is more to it than just the freedom to, you know, eat what you want to eat, or go where you want to go, or do what you want to do. Because any time we give a child more room to move and run, they come up with different things, and they think more, and they have ideas. You know, we can give a kid, you know, a Lego set, and they can build all kinds of amazing things because their brains are working and thinking. If we don't give them anything, they don't have that opportunity. So I think this is a starting point. I think spelling out those pieces that we want to make sure that they get to is just the beginning of allowing people to have that reign of freedom to maybe think past, what do I want to do in my life different, rather than just holding them to that safe little place, that safe little, you know, cave that we put them in, essentially, of our parental responsibility or care. I just think it's an opportunity.
Representative Noble.
Thank you, Chair. I am in favor of a human rights commission, especially when it comes when you're talking about intellectual or developmental disabilities. My lens is through my uncle, who's 86 years old now and has lived with cerebral palsy his entire life, mm-hmm. whose mother was told to institutionalize him mm-hmm. in the 40s because that's what was done. However, in this day and age of where the talk is so broad with regard to institutional bias, I have to join Representative Nierman in, and I can't think that these would be the top issues that we need to address when it comes to rights of people to live and function in our society. And then I'm also going to join Representative Stark in saying that these issues are a management issue. It doesn't need legislation. In fact, similar to other things that I've commented about out of this committee, it almost identifies a failure in management to have to require legislation to address these specific issues. So as far as a broader context in dealing with true human rights and a human rights commission, I'm all for it. But on this particular bill, I'm going to vote no.
Representative Lusa, you're a co-sponsor. Make any comments about it?
Well, I think it does fill a need. I understand what is being said from my colleagues, mm-hmm. But I do fully support the bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think of to weigh in here. I thought the testimony by the Self-Advocacy Commission or Coalition was very compelling. I think these are lived experiences that they have brought themselves forward. They think this kind of gathering of a commission would be really important. And I think it goes beyond I think some of the issues that you brought up about freedom to worship, freedom to read the kinds of things you want to read, those kinds of things I would think are equally important. I think it's pretty tricky when you start trying to lay out, and maybe these are the things that they bump up to every day, and so that's what showed up here, but I hope it goes beyond that, actually. And I think that the idea of it is to not just give direction to DHS about what they can do in their programs. And, in fact, this doesn't give any more legal rights. We have rights out there. It's that gray area in between. How do you manage programs that give people maximum flexibility to grow and explore while understanding the constraint of resources. That's where I started. Like, what? You mean people can just go to the store when they want? Like, that's not the expectation, is it? So that was it. I think that the woman answered very well about, no, you have to, you know, when you live in a group environment, you have to share resources, and we should be able to make those kinds of decisions and requests and within a limited constraint. So I thought that was an important part for me. It's not like I have the right to do everything anytime I want, anywhere. You know, that's it's not that. It's just, how do you give people the rights that able-bodied people, you know, people, independent people who are living out in the environment have, and how do you close that gap from where we have been very protective to giving people more choice? And I think it's not just for DHS. My hope from this commission would be that they, and again, this is a proposal to come up with an idea for a commission. It's not to create the commission, but I hope in considering how they would put this commission together, what its mission is, what the makeup of it would be how do you kind of shift the cultural view of how people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are treated in their own families, in the private sphere, I think is really critical. People that are not, you know, in necessarily in programs, but are living with families in the community. So that would be my hope for this commission. So.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm thinking about the list here where it says, and I do have an appreciation that it says including but not limited to,
yeah,
and then how it goes into the list. And so to kind of follow suit with what you've sat on budget committees with this,
yeah,
specific agency, what we tend to normally do in a budget committee is we say, agency, go do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to take that liberty right now, and when they come back and report in December, I would like them to give us a list of what their current policies are on these things already, and in addition to what their policies are on these, like where do they want to go in the future? Like, can they do this without the commission? Oh, you know, yeah. So I mean, we can just lay that out. Like, tell us what you're doing on all these, and what the long-term goal is already, with or without a commission on these topics.
Exactly. That's good direction.
Oh, sorry.
One more?
And, yeah, I lost my train of thought there a moment ago. I'd like to know not just the list, though. Like, what are the other, you know, if you were to list out, here's five or so things listed, what are your top 15? You know, what are the top things that you were working on in the human rights, you know, area and the policies on them?
And how do you help to, you know, you're here. These are the challenges. How do you help to move it from here? And what would the role of a commission be in helping move, whether it's the cultural view of how our society views that, or specific programs, or specific targeted populations like parents,
right.
Yeah.
And
some real specificity. I would like to see some real specificity.
Thank you. And so I make an assumption, Cassie, if you'll pass that information along, because they were here and then they left.
Okay.
You know, the
I'm sure they're watching
15?
From somewhere.
What are you
I'm
working
sure they're
on?
Watching from somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Okay, Representative.
Well, I'm a little confused on who the they is in this conversation, but I also really, really want to emphasize that the disabled community has every right, in my opinion, to select the parameters they want, the activities they want that fits their needs,
yeah,
not that we're labeling or saying what their needs are.
Right.
That's, I think, a huge step that is going a long ways as we think now in this day and age. So that's just super important to me.
That's right. And I think the day is DHS, because they are being the yes. ones tasked with coming back with a proposal. But certainly they should engage.
But again, DHS is a big thing with
right.
thousands of employees. So, I mean, how is that focus narrowed down?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of our responsibility to figure out.
Yeah. And to make sure that they engage the community
yes.
in coming up with this proposal.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
And so specifically, I'm asking the Department of Human Services, the director of the IDD, you know, portion of that agency,
Lilia.
Assuming that she, as far as I know, she will continue in that role. But whoever the director is, come December 1st, I would like them to have that information for us.
Okay, great. Representative Noble.
I guess I would just mention, as I'm looking more at this list, I'm becoming a little bit more angry that these are actually even issues.
Mm-hmm.
And again, through the lens of my relative that had to deal with this in the 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. and knowing the family environment he grew up in, this is not what he dealt with in the time that I've known him, and today he deals with other issues that are larger. So I guess I'm still a no, but I'm just really kind of offended that this is even an issue for this population. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And sadly, it is. Yep. Okay. Any other comments? Nope. Seeing none. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative
Borsick?
Yes.
Representative
Meek? Aye. Representative Meerman?
No.
Representative
Noble?
No.
Representative
Pelosi?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes, with expectations.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. Senate Bill 834 passes. And Representative Pelosi, would you like to carry this floor?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. Close the work session on Senate Bill 834A. Open a work session on Senate Bill 949A. Cassie, what do we have?
Senate Bill 949A makes non-competition agreements and employment contracts for home care workers voidable by the home care worker. The bill makes a covenant between the employer and the home care worker voidable when the covenant prohibits transacting business with customers or soliciting other employees. There is no fiscal and no revenue impact, and the Senate vote was 29-1.
Okay. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 949A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 949A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this bill? Yes, Rep. Meerman.
So I think just non-compete agreements are kind of a necessary thing in certain industries, and so I'm kind of wary about prohibiting them here, and I don't think I'm convinced that that needs to be done, so I'll be a no on this.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Any objection? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Borsig?
Yes.
Representative
Meek? Aye.
Representative Meerman?
No.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Pelosi?
Aye.
Representative
Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kenny Geyer? Aye. Senate Bill 949A passes. Would anyone like to carry this bill? Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez carries the bill. Thank you. And we will close the work session on 949A. And I'm going to carry over, because we had it listed right, 244. I'm opening a work session on 244 for the purpose of carrying it over. We're still waiting on amendments on that one. Mm. I'm going to close the work session on 24, carrying it over to Tuesday. Well, let's do that and see if it's ready by then. So Tuesday,
hopefully,
the 9th, May 9th, at the 8 a.m. hearing. I'm going to close the work session on 244. All right. What do we have? Is that it?
That's it.
That is it. Getting out of here quickly. I think we're going to aim to, we're going to try to post at the end of the day if we have enough responses. Information session next Tuesday. On the question that Representative Olson and Representative Stark brought up last time about foster care rules. Who can be foster care parents? What are some of the parameters around that? What have been some of the concerns? So far, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Sanchez, and Representative Stark are looking into who might be a part of that panel. Depending on how many people we have, we may start at 8:30 as opposed to 8, so stay tuned to what the posting is. And then after that, we'll go into a couple different budget, the following Thursday, the following Tuesday, OHCS budget hearing, and then DHS budget. We have a sense of the overall budgets for requests and challenges for those departments. And then we will try to wrap up with whatever bills are trickling through. All right, thank you. So we are adjourned. All right, thank you. So we are adjourned.